Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you O'Farrell, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warming light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew, and a thousand blades were flushing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest Homeland, comrades. It's January the 23rd, 2014. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Okay, first thing I suppose I need to mention is that our friends in the silk suits have been sleazing around Seattle, asking questions about me. So let's run over that whole deal again. I'm sorry for the repetition, but these things happen every 6 months or so when they've got some budget to burn in the local bureau office, and they send their droids in the black SUVs out to do their Jack Bauer imitations on people's doorsteps. Now, as you know, I have told you repeatedly how to deal with these people, which is to ask them if they have a warrant, and if they don't, then tell them to get one and physically close the door in their faces so they can't keep on trying to engage you in conversation from the hallway or from your porch. As with most of what I tell you people to do, I am usually ignored, which I have come to accept as part of my curse of Cassandra, the lady in Greek mythology who always prophesied true, but whom no one believed. Now, this is probably how it's going to be for the rest of my career, however long or short that may be. I will continue to tell you people what needs to be done and how to do it, and I will continue to be ignored, and people will continue to go to prison, and the movement will continue to go nowhere, but there's no accounting for the gods' sense of humor. So we'll move along. Anyway, one of the tactics the organs, as Solzhenitsyn calls them, use in this country to try and get you to not do what I keep telling you to do is to pretend that they just want to ask a few questions about some minor thing or other which you are clearly not involved in, and so you think, hey, what's the harm? And then once they're inside your home and sitting on your sofa or asking to go to the bathroom or finding other excuses to go poking around into things, all of a sudden the topic changes and they start asking you about whatever or whoever it is that they're really interested in. And then the terrified and paranoid emails start flying. They were here. They were here asking about so-and-so. They were here and your name was mentioned. And then everyone goes, yeah, my name was mentioned. No, no, Mr. Bill, anything but that. And everybody goes running around like a chicken with their head cut off in a kind of St. Vitus's dance of paranoia. Why was my name mentioned? What are they after? Are they going to kick in my door at 4 a.m. and shoot my dog and drag my children out of bed and stick guns in their faces while they drag me out of the house, and that's the last time I'll ever see my home and my family? Probably not, because when they decide to do that, they don't go around knocking on other people's doors, dropping your name where they know it will get back to you. They simply do it, although in some cases they do like to play with you a bit like they did with Edgar Steele. What they're trying to do when they do the rounds like this is stir things up and get everybody all paranoid and frightened and confused so they are better targets for recruitment as informers. Now, a lot of this kind of stuff is just cruising for snitches. Anyone who will talk to them about anything at all whom they can develop into an informer, one of their $400 a week men. That's apparently the standard informer pay these days. $400 per week, tax-free, which works out to a little over $20,000 per year. Not a bad little sideline if, like most of these creeps, you can only barely earn minimum wage because you dicked off in school and didn't learn a marketable skill like I tell you people not to do once again, and we'll get into that. Anyway, this is what they've been doing with me, cruising all over the country, dropping my name and seeing what comes up. Seeing if they can get a rise out of me, so forth and so on, which, okay, yeah, I suppose spending all this time on this subject on this podcast is getting a rise out of me, if you want to look at it like that. But I need to do my best to prep the rest of you guys to deal with this crap yourselves, even if you don't listen. There's always the chance that one or two of you will not ignore me and do as I say, and so I might save a life or two. At one stage, when I had a Facebook account under my own name, there were rousting people on my Facebook friends list, like that poor guy in Texas, whom I barely knew on the internet, and whom I've never met, but they came into his place about this time last year with all kinds of warrants and spent 2 days tearing his house apart and digging up his backyard, all of the time pestering him with questions about me and the NVA. And last spring sometime, I think it was, the Joint Terrorism Task Force was cruising around Portland wanting to know where they could find the NVA. Their words, not mine. You see, apparently, there is some moron somewhere in the bowels of the J. Edgar Hoover building in D.C. who is convinced that the NVA exists and that I am hiding it out in the vast, trackless depths of the primeval Northwest Forest. And we're just waiting to do something that will mess up Hillary's impending coronation in 2016 or something to that effect. No, really, I'm not making that up. I honestly don't know whether there's anybody in authority in the Bureau who is really that fucking stupid that they don't know the difference between fiction and reality, or else more likely they've decided that if there is no NVA, then there should be, which is something we finally agree on. And the ridiculously misnamed Justice Department has decided to fabricate one. Now, you remember how Combat 18 came into being in the UK? I've told you that Grandpa Simpson story before. A communist Jew named Jerry Gable made it up. Anyway, at the risk of boring some of our older, regular listeners with a repetition, let me get into the topic again here. This is important. You guys need to internalize this and, who knows, maybe even give a little consideration to really listening to me and doing what I say here, because these creatures are dangerous human predators and they can do terrible harm to you and your family. I know, sometimes I sound a bit glib and dismissive when I talk about the organs, and maybe I shouldn't. But make no mistake, dealing with these people is like handling a cobra. One bite, as an afterthought, can make you die in agony. Any encounter at all is deadly dangerous, and that's one reason why every contact with them needs to be kept to an absolute minimum length of time, and why you must not feed them with information or tantalize them into thinking they can get information from you, because they'll never leave you alone after that. Information is what they use to do the terrible evil that they inflict on the world. I've been ad-libbing up until now, but what I'm going to do at this point is to read to you a few pertinent excerpts from the new 5th edition of the Party Manual. This is how you need to deal with the problem of police and FBI harassment. Based on my 40 years of experience, in which I have only been arrested 3 times, and I have never spent a single night in a jail cell, so my method works. If you choose to ignore it and let your alligator mouth get your parakeet ass in trouble, then there's not a damn thing I can do about it. That seems to be who we are. But I'll never stop trying. Anyway, here goes. From the 5th edition of the Northwest Front Party Manual. What you have to understand about our lords and masters in federal law enforcement, and indeed anyone who works in any federal or state government department, is that in bureaucratic circles, it's all about budget. Your department's cut of the taxpayer pie. The bigger it is, the more important your boss man is within the pecking order, and the more prestige your department has. Anti-terrorism is now a multi-billion dollar business in America and most countries throughout the world. There are agencies employing tens of thousands of people who want to make sure that flood of wealth and power keeps on flowing into their pockets. And if there are no terrorists to stop with all those billions of dollars, if someone in the regime realizes that they are wasting immense amount of time and money every year on what is, at the present time, little more than wild paranoia, then obviously that can't be allowed lest the flow of dollars and goodies slow down to a trickle. Burn this into your brain. Without terrorists, there cannot be anti-terrorists. You now have the explanation for so much that has been going on over the past generation. It is to everyone's benefit that terrorists be occasionally run to earth and caught, and put on display by the various agencies, except for the poor dumb bastards who are framed, of course, and they don't count since they're nobodies. Apu from the Quickie Mart, or some dumb old white boy who is too stupid to realize that Barack Hussein Obama is the one, bow down and apply his lips in the prescribed manner. A lot of what the FBI and BATFE and DHS and Secret Service and NSA and CIA do is make work designed solely to spend money and justify their existence. Even better, to justify their existence at the expense of all the other agencies in the federal alphabet soup. Above all, they need to justify their immense budgets to the bean counters back in Washington, D.C. Whoever gets the big budget has to spend that money, or it looks bad. If you're thrifty and you actually save the government money by bringing your department in under budget, then what they'll do is cut your allocation for the next fiscal year, and that's no way for an FBI career man to build an empire. Some years ago, a former FBI agent published his memoirs, and he described how on a slow day his SAIC, special agent in charge, would walk through the office yelling at people, "Why aren't you people out in the field catching bad guys? Come on, boys and girls, we've still got $200,000 worth of budget this office has to burn before July the 1st. Hit the road, burn some rubber, stay in some motels, and let me see some expense vouchers." Now, this essentially is what happened to Randy Weaver in 1992. The ATF spent a lot of money and effort trying to flip Randy as an informer against the Aryan Nations. Rather than taking no for an answer, some special agent got pissed off at the stroppy white boy who wouldn't do as he was told by his betters, and started harassing Randy, trying to coerce him into ratting. This included such monkey shines as rigging up fiber optic cameras in the trees around Weaver's cabin to spy on him with his daughter Sarah, and framing Weaver on a sawed-off shotgun charge to bring him into the system, quote-unquote, and get a legal handle on him, which the Federals now admit that they did, rare for them. All the while, this special agent in charge was spending budget money on Randy Weaver and building up a file with no court case and no conviction, and finally he was told by Washington that he had spent too much money and he damn well better come up with a conviction for something, which led to the attack on Weaver's home and the murder of his wife and son. Sam and Vicky Weaver died for some ATF agents, bottom line. Federal agents spend a large part of their time and budget attempting to build up networks of potential informants. Retired FBI agent Bud Romer wrote in his memoirs that an agent is only as good as his informants, and this official attitude hasn't changed. The jewels in an FBI man's crown are his string of snitches. They begin this process by finding people who will talk to them at all about anything. Sports, weather, politics, doesn't matter, because that leads to other stuff. When the secret police show up at your door for the first time, they're scoping you out as a potential snitch simply by asking you a few innocuous questions about nothing in particular and feeling your vibes. Your answers to those questions are not so important in themselves as the fact that you answer them at all, if you do. And if you do, the first time they leave, they will mark you down in their little notebook in their files as a potential source, as someone who will talk to them. And that's what you don't want. Because once you establish that you will talk to them about anything, then they're going to keep coming back looking for more and more information about more and more people. They especially love to locate smart-ass right-winger types who want to show off how clever they are and how much they know about the Constitution and the law, and who will run their mouths to prove that point, which of course they aren't. Smart, that is. In the first place, the Constitution is irrelevant and has been irrelevant since 1861, when Abraham Lincoln, the first imperial president, called for 100,000 troops to use armed force against other Americans to force them to obey him. In the second place, among other things, federal agents are trained intelligence analysts. As long as the noise is coming out of your mouth, they will find some way to extract information from it, and they will use that information to destroy human lives, including your own. When federal agents come to your door and say that they want to ask you questions, the very first words out of your mouth must be, "Do you have a warrant?" If they try to bluster or BS you off the subject, repeat the question. Do you have a warrant? Do not allow them to evade that question. Say nothing else until they answer the question. And above all, do not let them in voluntarily, not to go to the bathroom or get a drink of water or use the phone or anything like that. Because once they are inside, they will find some way to wander all over your home sneaking and peeking. If the agents do have a warrant, most likely they won't be knocking on the door anyway. They'll be kicking it in around dawn, screaming threats at you and throwing you to the floor and sticking automatic weapons in your back, or more likely hiding behind the local police SWAT team while they do it. If they don't have a warrant, then you simply say, come back when you get one, and immediately close the door. That's important. Close the door. Don't stand there with it open waiting for them to go away. They won't go away. They'll try to engage you in further conversation and persuade you to invite them in so that they can sneak and peek. Do not give them any opportunity to say anything else. Once you have told them to come back with a warrant, close the door. If they force their way into your home without a warrant, which they can now legally do under the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act of 2006, then is when the five words kick in. I have nothing to say. Do not try to bandy words or debate with them or show them how clever you are about the law and the Constitution. The FBI and the DHS know all about the Constitution. They simply choose to ignore it because they can, and because they know that there will be no negative consequences for them if they do. Don't try to tell them that you have rights. Out here in the real world, you are a racially aware white man, and so no, you don't. They may try to verbally provoke you into assaulting them so that they can arrest you and have a charge to hold over your head. Don't fall for it. Answer every question with either I want an attorney or I have nothing to say. Then, when your attorney arrives, you still have nothing to say. Remember, these people have one purpose only, and that is to do you harm. Human beings and human lives are the fuel, the fodder, the raw material on which an FBI agent or other federal investigator builds his career. His achievement is measured in years of prison time that other people have to serve, not him. So he really goes after those years, looking to pile them on to anyone he can so his record shines in Washington. A federal agent is not your friend. Never. Not under any circumstances. They are not interested in you. They are not interested in your life or your problems. They are not interested in you as a person at all. To them, you and your family are either targets to be destroyed or stepping stones they can use to build their careers and land that plush job at headquarters in Washington, D.C., or maybe in the Honolulu field office. When the secret police show up on your doorstep, they are there for one reason only, to do harm, either to you or someone else. You must never forget this, because if you do, you will pay for it in many, many years of living hell. All it takes is a few words coming out of your mouth to destroy your life and the lives of countless other people forever. The only way to avoid that is to make sure that only five words ever come out of your mouth. I have nothing to say.
Whatever you say, say nothing. When you talk about you know what, or if you know who should hear, you know what you'll get. It'll take you off to you know where, you wouldn't know how long. So for you know who's sake, don't let anyone hear you sing it, sing it away. And whatever you say, say nothing. When you talk about you know what, or if you know who should hear, you know what you'll get. They'll take you off to you know where, you wouldn't know how long. So for you know who's sake, don't let anyone hear you singing this song. You all know what I'm speaking of when I mention you know what, and I fear it's very dangerous to even mention that, for the other ones are always near, although you may not see. And if anyone asks who told you that, please don't mention me. And whatever you say, say nothing. When you talk about you know what, or if you know who should hear, you know what you'll get. They'll take you off, you know where, but you wouldn't know how long. So for you know who's sake, don't let anyone hear you singing this song. You all know who I'm speaking of when I mention you know who, or if you know who should hear you,
You know what he do. So if you don't see me again, you'll know why I'm away. And if anyone asks you where I've gone, here's what you must say. Whatever you say, say nothing. When you talk about you know what, for if you go say it, you know what you'll get. They'll take you off, you know where, but you wouldn't know how long. So for you know who's sake, don't let anyone hear you singing this song. Enough about so-and-so, not to mention such-and-such. And it better end my song, and I've already said too much. For the less you say and the less you hear, the less you'll go astray. And the less you think and the less you do, the more you'll hear them say. Whatever you say, say nothing, come on. When you talk about you know what, or if you know who say, you know what you'll get. They'll take you off, you know where, but you wouldn't know how long. So for you know who's sake, don't let anyone hear you singing this song. And whatever you say, say nothing, when you talk about you know what. For if you know who should hear you, you know what you'll get. They'll take you off, you know where, but you wouldn't know how long. So for you know who's sake, don't let anyone hear you singing this song. And whatever you say, say nothing, when you talk about you know what. But if you know who's sake, you know what you'll get. They'll take you off, you know where, but you wouldn't know how long. So for you know who's sake, don't let anyone hear you singing this song. For you know who's sake, don't let anyone hear you singing this song.
Good afternoon, comrades. I had an interesting run-in with diversity recently. At 2 one morning, I woke up to the sound of knocking on my front door. Before I could actually get to the door to figure out who the hell was knocking at my door at such an ungodly hour, the knocking stopped. Shortly afterward, I heard voices in the hallway outside, one of which identified himself as a police officer, informing my neighbors that there had been an accidental shooting in the building, and they were checking to make sure everyone was okay. Not knowing the circumstances, I chose not to open my door at that time, figuring they would eventually work their way back around to me, which they did. It turned out not to be quite as serious as first implied. It wasn't an accidental shooting, it was an accidental discharge of a firearm. I'm guessing you've already figured out where I'm going with this. Yes, the quote-unquote person, and I say that with very definite quotes around the word, in question was some kind of mulatto who'd moved into the apartment a number of months ago with a couple of white friends. Uyghurs is probably a more applicable term here. All of whom have been nothing but trouble since they moved in. Thankfully, the soundproofing is thick enough here so I don't hear them, but the evidence of the trouble they cause is abundantly visible for anyone who chooses to look. However, sometimes there are happy endings to such circumstances. The Uyghurs and their monkoid pet were seen moving out a few days later. Of course, the fact that the monkoid pet should never have been allowed to move in the first place has simply been ignored, since race is only skin deep, don't you know? What I found so funny and so maddening is that every single person I told about the incident was outraged on my behalf and concerned for my safety, but not for reasons that make any sense to me. They were outraged and concerned because someone had the audacity to keep a loaded gun in their apartment, but not one showed any sign of understanding that the problem wasn't the loaded weapon per se, but rather what was holding the weapon in the first place, even after they became aware that was what was holding it. A gun isn't going to do you much good if you have to get it out of a gun safe and load it while someone is breaking in, now is it? But they don't seem to understand that either. It wasn't too long ago that people in this country understood that basic fact. But then again, this country used to be a safe place to live, where you didn't have to lock your doors at night or close your windows for fear someone would crawl in and rob you, or worse, while you were sleeping. And most people never bothered to lock their cars because who was going to steal it, for heaven's sake? But then the flow of mud began. At first it was just a trickle, and it was easily avoided since it was almost entirely contained within certain recognizable boundaries. Our parents and grandparents failed to take action when it was but a minor problem. I'm of the opinion, though, that they don't bear the entirety of the blame. They had no frame of reference within which to understand the true reality of the situation since they had never experienced it, and they were already being subtly bombarded at that time with social engineering to create fear surrounding the term racist. We can all be guilty of choosing not to see what is right in front of our noses when it involves a term like racist or racism and an understanding of the possible consequences of being associated with such a term. On top of that, the world they lived in was basically still white and sane, which would make it much harder than today to identify with the consequences of trying to integrate mud people into white culture. We don't have those excuses or reasons today, though. We can clearly see that white and dark don't mix. The results of the experiment are right before our very eyes, yet we do nothing. Most of us continue to live in neighborhoods that grow ever darker and send our children to the state-run indoctrination centers disguised as schools. Our children are raised by third-world mud people in daycares before and after attendance at the indoctrination center, either because both parents work or there is only one parent in the household as its sole source of support. Those of you listening to this podcast know what needs to be done. With understanding comes responsibility. We are not third world mud people. We are white. We know how to live with honesty, integrity, and honor. We know how to look at a situation, assess what needs to be done for the greater good of our people, and do it. We have proven that time and time again throughout our history. So why did we do it then, but don't do it now? What's holding us back? What's holding you back? You're white. Nothing is too hard for you if you set your mind to it. The difficult takes a day. The impossible takes a little longer. This is not impossible, but you have to choose to make it happen. The choice is yours. Choose right. Hail victory, comrades.
I haven't run any of my little historical segments recently, any of these recordings from our movement's past. This is a very short one. It is a very rare recording of Benito Mussolini speaking in English. It was recorded in 1929, and it's Mussolini sending a message of friendship and solidarity to the people of the United States.
I am very glad to be able to express my friendly feelings towards the American nation. Friendship with which Italy looks at the millions of citizens who from Alaska to Florida, from the Pacific to the Atlantic, live in the United States, is today deeply rooted in our hearts. This feeling, created by mutual interests, shall contribute to the preparation of an even brighter era in the life of both nations. I greet the wonderful energy of the American people, and I see and recognize among you tons of your land as well as ours, my fellow citizens, who are working to make America great. I salute the great American peace. I salute the Italians of America, who unite in a single love our two nations.
Greetings from Seattle, comrades. This is Andy Donner. There are a few things I do regularly on Radio Free Northwest which seem to confuse people, especially those recently introduced to the Northwest Front. I'm going to explain a few of those things today, since apparently they need explanations. It's true that the party and I tend to refer to America as America and to denigrate Americans. It's also true that several of the RFN commentators have had to repeatedly respond to the gripe that someone doesn't want to move to the homeland, specifically a particular location within it, because that location is full of liberals. I've had to periodically remind myself that not every American has had the chance to educate themselves on political and racial matters as well as would be desired, so I'm going to try to straighten this out. Americanism expresses itself in many awful ways which have been discussed on other episodes of Radio Free Northwest. The real Americanism the party concerns itself with is the Americanism displayed in the white nationalist movement. This is exactly the same Americanism present in American society, but on a different level. White nationalists sometimes refer to American society as being asleep and in need of waking up. I hate to dredge up that subject again, but there's a comparison I need to make between American Americanism and white nationalist Americanism which involves just that topic. I have dealt with the false objective of waking people up before on RFN. It's the wrong way to explain what happens when someone accepts their own racism, but I'm not going to delve into that right now. I'm only going to tolerate the concept of waking people up for the purposes of today's discussion. One of the major consequences of Americanism, both in and out of the white nationalist movement, is the belief that anything American is the best that ever was, and America must be preserved at all costs, because if you don't like America or its constitution, then you hate mom, God, and apple pie. This results, almost invariably, in a complete and total lack of political and historic perspective, and the inability to engage in deep, serious, and uncomfortable political thought. That tendency is what I'm going to shoot down today. Waking people up isn't really a thing, but I'm pretending it is to play devil's advocate. White nationalists and others of fringe political alignments are always wondering what it will take to wake people up, as well as when, whatever it is, will happen. Don't get me wrong, I understand there's a difference between a white nationalist and non-racial Joe Public. White nationalists are, at the very least, concerned with racial issues in general and the good of whites in particular. Joe Public pretends not to notice issues pertaining to race, but for today I'll go along with the idea that he merely needs to be presented with some fact or incident that will cause him to wake up. Let's not be so one-sided about this waking up business. White nationalists need to wake up to a few things themselves. Namely, that the state of racial matters has declined so much that we're now in a position where we can't sustain all of America's territory as our own. That we have to physically separate from the MUDs, and we must seize state power in order to keep the United States of America from forcing its laws and MUD populations on us ever again. It seems as though most of you haven't woken up to that. In reality, it's only an issue of your refusal to perform actual political thought, and I'm going to prove that right now. Some time ago, I was confronted, yet again, with disdain towards the homeland in general and a portion of it in particular. This almost always takes the form of griping about Washington and Oregon being largely Democratic states, and sometimes we hear this critique directed towards Seattle and Portland in particular. It doesn't seem these whiners have woken up to how the election system in this country is weighted in favor of highly populated areas, which always attract trash and non-whites. Every election in a racially mixed society is going to slant towards the political left because of racial demographics. It also seems like the crybabies haven't woken up to the fact that this type of political process means the deal has been sealed and whites aren't ever going to control American politics again. This time, however, the complaint was directed towards Idaho and Montana. Apparently they're full of liberals too. Funny, though, this part of the homeland is usually contrasted with the liberal areas when the party is told all about how the Northwest imperative is wrong and won't work. Is everywhere liberal now? Is nowhere safe? I haven't brought this incident up until now because I have had to stop and consider precisely how a person ends up thinking this sort of thing. As it just so happens, American politics is a very strange realm because it makes use of political vocabulary in a unique way, which I'll demystify for you. Two sets of political terms exist to describe ideas and the people who adhere to them. They're not at all related. The absolute, fixed, and unchanging terms are right, left, and center. The dynamic, variable, and relative terms are conservative, liberal, and moderate. The relative terms only have concrete meaning in a particular time and place. In general, liberals are the people pushing change on society. Conservatives are the ones resisting that change. Moderates fall in between them. On the other hand, the terms right, left, and center are ideological positions and don't change meanings or philosophies regardless of time or place. While it is true that in contemporary American politics, liberals are also leftists, it's not true that conservatives are rightists. I don't have the time to go into details between the differences, so I'm just going to hit the high points. If you want to know more, pick up a book. Leftism, which has as its ultimate expression communism, is completely race and reality backwards. Rightism is based in reality and accepts race as a fundamental attribute of the world. Its ultimate political expression is some variety of fascism, a good example of which would be National Socialism. Conservatives in today's America are called neoconservatives, which is really just another word for capitalist Jews. They are, at best, kept opposition and just as committed to a multiracial society as the liberals, which means they cannot be rightists. All politics involve theory and practical application. Neocons might get most of the practical application somewhat right, but their theory is as left gets. This leads us to the conclusion that all American politics take place left of center, even if it doesn't look that way at first glance. But if all American politics are leftist, and leftists are correctly identified as the contemporary liberals of our society, then all of America is liberal. Somewhat upset about coming home because of any liberalism present in part or all of the Northwest homeland should realize everyone, everywhere is a liberal compared to you. After all, you're a racist, which means you're fundamentally right of center. Why the Northwest naysayers won't wake up to this is beyond me, because any proper racial nationalist, provided they've been racial for a certain amount of time, should have educated themselves enough to come to this conclusion on their own. Someone who doesn't grasp this material just yet is a political neophyte and doesn't need to shout the odds to the rest of us. In fact, these political concepts are well understood in every country outside America. That's why other nations' media outlets always criticize anything having to do with whites acting on their race's behalf as being right-wing. It's also why any conservative political personality in America denies being on the right when they're accused of it. The only people who can't seem to pick up on the correct use of political language are white nationalist Americans who are still trying to get their mom, God, and apple pie back from the mean old liberals who are picking on them. Why they can't wake up to the reality that the only way forward for our race is for them to come home and help the Northwest Front create a new all-white nation in the Pacific Northwest is beyond me, because it's completely obvious to anyone who has actually considered racial reality with a view towards change for the better. If you want to complain about Joe Public not waking up, then fine, I can't stop you. But deep down inside, we all know he's just making the choice to ignore what he's perfectly well aware of. What I'd like all of you to do is wake up to the fact that you, and by extension, the white race, have nothing left in this society whatsoever to conserve. Of course, you and I both know that you don't need to wake up. Before today, you were all fully aware of this and just don't own up to it because you would have to admit your situation to yourself and actually do something about it before we all go extinct. I'm not trying to jump down your throats, but I am trying to point out the obvious to you because you can't seem to be bothered to point it out to yourselves. Next time you get mad at Americans for not waking up, why not look at yourself like you look at Joe Public? You might just realize what it's like to perform actual political thought as opposed to what's gone on in the white nationalist movement for the last few decades. Hail victory, comrades.
This is a Confederate song from the great Southern folk singer Bobby Horton.
Country's flag, rally boys, nor do not lag. Come from every vale and crag, sons of liberty. Northern band who tread our soil, forth they come for blood and spoil. To the homes we've gained with toil, shouting slavery. Lincoln's bloody band now invades the free man's land, armed with sword and firebrand, against the brave and free. Arm ye then for fray and fight, march ye forth both day and night, stop not till the foe's in sight, sons of chivalry. ¶¶
flows of brave men who once arose, burst the shackles of their foes, honest men and free. Rise then in your power and might, seek the spoil of brave the fight, strike for God, for truth, for right, strike for liberty.
Okay, we need to revisit the topic of these FBI agents who are rolling around knocking on doors in Seattle and up and down the Puget Sound area. Now, I've now been informed that I called it right, and the ostensible issue or individual they claim to be investigating, in fact, has nothing to do with anything in particular, and they drop it as soon as they get their foot in the door and get their tax-paid asses plunked down on somebody's sofa. Now, at this point, it looks like they're just doing a general sweep or casting of the nets. In addition to the Northwest Front, they're asking about people who are affiliated with American Europeans United and the American European Information Forum, and they're also harassing one well-known Seattle Holocaust revisionist. So at this point, the whole thing actually appears to be nothing but a budget burner, a way to spend some time and money and update their files on people while claiming to be fighting non-existent terrorism. I am further informed that they really, really want to talk to me because I am considered to be some sort of grand prize, although they haven't shown up here yet. Now, I'm making this on Wednesday morning, and who knows, maybe they'll knock on the door while I'm speaking, but as yet, there's no sign of them. Tell you what, guys, I'll save you and the taxpayers some money and effort. No, I won't talk to you if you show up on my doorstep, but I will break my own rules so far as to talk to you now, here in public, where everybody can hear what I have to say to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. There is no legitimate reason for you to be investigating me, asking questions about me, or accumulating files on me, or anyone associated with me, and we both know this. I have every right, under the Constitution of the United States, to say what I want, write what I want, and think what I want, and I will continue to do so regardless of the fact that the Constitution is no longer in force and we are ruled by the imperial decrees, pardon me, the executive orders, of a high yellow nigger who is, in fact, legally debarred from holding the office of president because he was not born in this country as the Constitution requires, and who, in case you guys hadn't noticed, really isn't very bright. I do not break the law, and neither does anyone associated with me, and we both know this perfectly well, just as we both know that these facts will not prevent you from doing whatever the hell you want to me or anybody else, because this is now a third world country wherein your agency operates absolutely without any supervision, legal control, or accountability. You are the men and women who, through your behavior and through your very existence, mark the United States as a tyranny. And this is not to say that you're on the wrong scent. At least, in my case, you're chasing a genuine enemy and not framing some poor Apu at the local Quickie Mart or loading up some dumb bastard at a Kansas airport with fake explosives in order to rack up brownie points with the reptiles in their carpeted and air-conditioned dens in the J. Edgar Hoover building. Yes, I am absolutely opposed to everything you and your baby shit brown paymaster do and everything that you are. You personify what Bertolt Brecht called the banality of evil. And yes, it was Brecht who said that. That plagiarizing Jewish Hannah Arendt stole it from him. You commit some of the most horrible crimes in human history, and yet as human beings you're totally lackluster, almost robot-like. I mean, you take your orders from computers, from machines, for God's sake, and you hire all those $400 a week informants like you were getting them from labor ready for assembly line work, and you spend your time trying to get them to tell lies in court, like Stalin's prosecutors setting up a show trial by bribing the witnesses with an extra half pound of bread ration. What you do isn't just vile, it must be dreary. Don't you guys ever get tired of framing confused and eccentric and completely harmless people for crimes that you and everybody in the courtroom knows damn well they didn't commit in order to fill some quota of alleged terrorists you have to catch so your office can get next year's budget? God, that must be soul-deadening work. No wonder you guys have so many problems with alcoholism and burnout. No wonder your eyes always look so dead. I mentioned that in one of my books, you know, the way that you people always have this creepy, dead look in your eyes, no matter how well-dressed you are. Sorry, where was I? Do not mistake my obedience to your laws for loyalty to the United States. I could give you a long speech about all the evil that you and your kind have done, but suffice to say that there simply isn't any more United States to be loyal to. This thing that you people have created may have the same red, white, and blue Masonic dish rag flying over the post offices, but it bears no resemblance at all to the United States of America created almost 2.5 centuries ago by a small group of educated, substantial, brilliant, and visionary white males. That United States, the real United States, was one of the most noble experiments ever undertaken by the human race. And for a few generations it worked. It came to an end on April the 9th, 1861, when the first imperial president, a man named Abraham Lincoln, placed his own hubris and the interests of foreign and domestic wealth above the law and above the wisdom of his ancestors and called for 100,000 troops to force Americans to obey his will and not the Constitution. From that point on, America has effectively been a dictatorship. Now, we all know what happened next. It was an illustration of the tragic fact of history that good does not always triumph over evil, and that happy endings usually go to those with the most lawyers, guns, and money. We have learned the same lesson many times since then, notably in 1918 and 1945. What I'm trying to get at here, for the benefit of my FBI monitors, is that you people speak of yourselves as law enforcement officers, but you're not. You are enforcing the will of a dictatorship, which is not the same as law. You have no legitimacy at all. You're just another armed gang in a society full of armed gangs. Better trained, better paid, better armed, better organized, and better dressed, to be sure. But still, that's all you are, just another gang. The moral difference between the FBI and the LA Crips and the Gambino family is nil. The one true test of the legitimacy of any law or law enforcement agency is that he who dispenses the law to the rest of us needs to be better than the rest of us. You guys flunk that one hands down. Now, J. Edgar Hoover, for all his many, many faults, understood that, and he demanded the highest moral and personal standards from his agents. Standards that the overwhelming majority of present FBI personnel could never meet in a month of Sundays. As problematic as Hoover himself was, I know guys from our own past who tangled with him, and they always said that he was a straight shooter and he played it by the book. You guys don't even have a book. You make it up as you go along. Now, I don't think there's any question that a John Connolly or a Donald Sachtleben or a John and Margot Bennett would never have happened on the old man's watch. Hoover, love him or hate him, was a cop. You guys are just hoodlums with badges. Now, the overwhelming majority of the people in this country know you for what you are, which is why the FBI and your sister agencies are so despised. You guys do know that you are hated and despised by normal people, don't you? Or does whatever little bubble you live in insulate you from that fact, like it shields you from all the other realities of life? I mean, surely you're not dumb enough to believe all those stupid TV shows like Bones and Criminal Minds that portray you as some kind of heroes. Surely not. I think in the back of your minds, you know it's all crap. I think you understand that you're really just criminals yourselves, except that you have a permission slip from other criminals with more money and more imagination. That's probably one of the reasons you like to kick in doors in the dawn and terrorize families that you drag from their beds, shoot dogs and stick gun barrels into the faces of children. Because it gives you a feeling of power that for a while makes you forget what you really are, what you know you are. Even you people have to realize that in real life there is nothing heroic about what you do. Where is the courage involved in fabricating audio tapes so you can imprison and destroy a 67-year-old man like Edgar Steele, who is now slowly dying of pneumonia and heart disease and medical malpractice in the fortress prison of Victorville? Where is the courage involved in expending thousands of man hours and probably millions of taxpayers' money by now to make sure that a completely harmless eccentric like Bill White spends the rest of his life in prison out of sheer personal malice, as near as anybody can figure? What the fuck is wrong with you people? Do you really not understand that nobody believes a damned word you say, and that out here in the real world, every decent human being holds you in utter contempt? You know, 80 years ago, Stalin's people were a lot more honest than you are. They'd just beat a confession out of someone with a table leg and take him down into the cellar and put a bullet in his brain. But you people can't destroy your master's enemies without all this nauseating hypocrisy of pretending he's broken some law or done something that everybody in the whole damn courtroom knows perfectly well is a crock of shit. Everybody knows you're just going through the motions because the regime wants somebody out of the way, and neither your masters nor you have the balls to stand up and admit it. I think that's what makes me the most sick and disgusted about this horror show that you and your kind have foisted on the rest of us in what was once as close to paradise on earth as men have ever been able to create. The sheer hypocrisy of it all, this stupid, revoltingly arrogant premise that scum like you are somehow better than the rest of us because you've got silly little badges and expensive suits and a permission slip to kill and torture from some political gangster in a black robe. Okay, I've raved enough now, but there's one more thing I've got to ask. Now, you FBI guys do know, don't you, that you're going to lose? It won't even be so much that somebody else wins. It will be the United States of America that will lose, because the United States, as a society and a power structure, riddled with corruption, greed, stupidity, incompetence, and affirmative action that fills your ranks with stupid and unqualified blacks and browns and women who can't do the jobs that they've been assigned. The United States of America long ago passed the point of no return. And you know, I think you FBI guys know this, probably better than I do, because you see it from the inside. Someone is going to bring you down one day, and I think you know it in the privacy of your own thoughts. And I think you know that you will never get the luxurious retirement home and the lifelong pension and all of those luscious goodies that America promised you and what you've been doing all this for. Because by the time you hit retirement age, this country is going to be burning like the oil fields of Kuwait. The money they give you will be worthless, and it won't buy anything. Most of America will be about like Baghdad in '04 and Kabul today, and you're not going to be able to take a step outside your fortified federal compounds without getting holes blown in your silk suits. Now, that is not a threat. That's a prophecy. That's what's coming, boys and girls, and I hope and I pray that this is done to you by men of my race and faith. I also hope and pray that I live to see it. That's about the only personal ambition I have left these days. I want to live long enough to see America burn, even if it's only through the window of some hideous nursing home. But even if it's the Muslims or the niggers or La Raza or the Occupy movement on steroids or whoever the hell does it, you FBI and the scum who pay you to do evil in this land are going down. As W.B. Yeats said, things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Now here's a song for all you FBI guys to think about while you're rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. This is Pete Seeger.
It was back in 1942, I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. The sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Well, the sergeant said, "Sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim." "Sergeant, don't be a nervous Nelly," the captain said to him. "All we need is a little determination. Men, follow me, I'll lead on." We were neck deep in the big muddy. The big fool says to push on. All at once, the moon clouded over. We heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later, the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, "Turn around, men, I'm in charge from now on." And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy about a half mile from where we'd gone. We were lucky to escape from the big muddy when the big fool said to push on. Well, I'm not going to point any moral, I'll leave that for yourself. Maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the paper, them old feelings come on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on.
All right, I'm going to reverse the usual procedure on this show, and I'm going to end with a Northwest Front housekeeping item, which is going to cause a lot of controversy, and which may, in fact, ignite rampant waves of paranoia and goat dancing, which is unfortunate, but it's something that's simply going to have to happen, and we're just going to have to ride it out. Now, the first thing I need to tell you is that we have reason to believe that over the next year, the number of people here in the homeland who wish to become part of the Northwest Front on the ground, working with local units, etc., is going to increase dramatically. I won't get into how we know this or why we believe this is a likelihood. Just trust me that our reasons are valid. Indeed, we're already showing signs of this increased interest. Ever since the front was founded, there has been discussion back and forth between our serious players, and we do have some, about what exactly constitutes quote-unquote Northwest Front membership, which is something that other people seem to want for social reasons, or else it's simply a concept that white people can't get out of their minds. I used to tell people to read John le Carré spy novels to envision the kind of struggle that I had in mind, but so far as I can tell, almost none of you did so, and those who did couldn't internalize what I meant, so scratch that. At some point in time, white Americans are going to have to wrap their minds around the concept of cellular organization and not big happy picnics and tiny little streetwalks, but that's going to take a lot of work, apparently. Now, there are those among us who want to create a National Alliance-style formal membership organization, complete with application forms, and maybe even that ultimate in movement horrors, the membership card, primarily to facilitate the collection of dues so we can predict some kind of income and formulate some kind of budget. And on the other hand, there are those who get almost hysterical at that very thought and every shade of opinion in between. Now, I've discussed this before, and I'm not going to plunge into it again because we still haven't quite worked it out, although the 5th edition white book does get into the question more extensively than the 2011 edition did. The trick from my point of view is to find a system that works in the real world and which causes the minimum of upset and space madness all around, given our racial tendency to go batshit over trivia. I'm not kidding. Getting 21st century white Americans to think and act like early 20th century Europeans seems to be damn near impossible, but if we're ever going to break away from 60 years of failure, it has to be done, somehow. One related aspect of things is the Northwest Front's proud assertion, and true assertion, that we are the only white nationalist group that conducts any kind of serious background check on our people. And certain recent events have highlighted the necessity for us to enhance this procedure, as well as the anticipated increase in people contacting us for active participation, which, I repeat, is on the way at some point in the future, anyway. They can't black us out forever, put it that way. As part of our enhanced background checking, the Northwest Front will soon be sending out with the intro packs a kind of questionnaire or form, which is not an application form, and which will state quite clearly that it is not an application form. Call it an information sheet, wherein you will give us information that we need to know about you to assess your potential use to the Northwest Republic. And here comes the kicker that will set the goats all leaping and whirling like dervishes. That information sheet will ask for a prospect's social security number and date of birth for the express purpose of vetting, which will include a criminal and military records check and other background research. This will be very similar to the normal pre-employment screening that any major company's human resources department does for people who come to work for them. The type of information that we will be asking for is the same information that you have to provide to almost everybody else for anything these days. It is ridiculous that someone who applies for a job at the local Dairy Queen gets a more thorough background check than someone who wants to be a revolutionary. There are three reasons for this, three things we're looking for. First, we need to know if there is anything in your background which indicates that you are not suitable white revolutionary material per se, specifically certain types of moral turpitude. And I can think of several occasions in my own past experience where a thorough preliminary screening would have prevented immense embarrassment and trouble later on down the road. Secondly, we need to know if you have actively lied to any of us about who you are and where you've been. Thirdly, we need to know if there are any nasty surprises waiting in the wings, any skeletons in your closet that are likely to come rattling out. I view everyone who comes into the party at these early stages as a potential leader. And we can't have a situation where someone who is recognized as a public spokesman or who is publicly associated with the party all of a sudden turns out to have something really grotty in their past that the media can use against us. Yes, I know what and who you're thinking about, and that's one reason we all need to get our act together, including me. Now, to try and keep the hysterics down to a dull roar, I should mention that people with a long and proven track record with the NF, and there are a lot of you out there, people who have made migration on their own, long-time supporters who have demonstrated by their behavior and their consistency that they have the right stuff, will probably be grandfathered in before the new system takes effect. Nor are we going to throw people off the list or anything like that other than for the usual reasons, which mostly involve simple disappearance. The most common reason for me to drop somebody from the Northwest Revolution list or the Northwest Observer list is because I just don't hear from them for a year, and for all I know, they could be dead or in jail or on the run from the bill collectors or their ex-wife's lawyer or whatever. All right. I'll wind up now. We'll give it a week and see how bad the sound and fury is, and then we'll talk about this again next week. But for now, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington 98194, or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaban. Freedom.
Still is beating heart.